Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me in studio right now, I'm pleased to welcome Senator Pat Colbrick. He represents Michigan's 7th District. Senator, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you, Rick. Thanks for the opportunity.
Now, of course, it's time of the cycle with elections coming up. We see a bunch of new faces coming to the Upper Peninsula. We're not always familiar with it.
Yeah.
Senator, you've got a great distinguished career in politics and also before, but you're kind of a new face for us up here in the UP. Yeah. So this is an opportunity to just get to know you a little bit, find out what, you know, issues are important to you as, you know, the election season kind of rolls along here. Let's just start a little bit. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners who may not know much about, you know, where you come from?
Well, I'm actually relatively new to politics. This is my second term right now in the state Senate. I never served in the House, and frankly, my only political experience prior to that was serving on church council. So my background's actually kind of unique for somebody going into elected office. I'm an aerospace engineer, so for all the folks up at Michigan Tech, our engineering factory for the state here, there's actually an engineer running for governor. And actually, I'm an aerospace engineer, worked for Boeing on the International Space Station. I worked on the life support system, and I'm happy to say everybody's doing just fine and dandy up there. It's working very nicely. I used to teach out at Space Camp. I work for the Department of Defense on some advanced training simulation programs for the military. Came back to Michigan and started up my own small business after a while. I've been in I was in my small business for about 6 years. It's a consulting business, going off and helping turn around failed businesses or businesses struggling with their operations and doing planning for proposals with the government and stuff. But I kind of was spending a lot of time living out of my suitcase at the time. And all the contracts that I was getting were out of the state. And I'm going, well, why aren't they here in Michigan? And I thought it was about time we went off and did something about that. And my wife and I start feeling called to go off and run for office. And it was not a very easy decision to make because as an engineer, I'm not exactly known for being an extrovert. So if you haven't heard much about me, it's because I'm not a marketing guy. We get out there and just get her done. And we focus on finding solutions to problems. And that's what I've been doing for the last 7 years in the Michigan Senate. I'm known as one of the most conservative senator in state of Michigan. I've been ranked the most conservative senator the last 2 out of 7 years, and I've had 3 out of the 7 years that I've been in service. I'm always in the top three. And it's not about the conservative label as much as it is an indication of the fact that what I say I do, I actually do. And the theme of this campaign going forward is about principles, and everything that I talk about and everything that I've done is based on a core set of values or principles that I put forward. Number one is that the government works for us, not the other way around. Something that I think some people have forgotten about up in Lansing. So when 81% of the people said no to a tax increase known as Proposal 1 back in 2015, you don't come back within 2 months and propose another tax increase, this time without a vote of the people. So I had provided a method of fixing our roads without increasing taxes that focused on higher quality roads. So principles matter. They not only talk about these principles that are not only about the issues of today, but they also address what the issues of tomorrow are. So first and foremost, I understand that I know who I work for. Second of all, whenever we put forward policies, a key principle is that we should be putting forward policies that are in the best interest of all of our citizens, not picking winners and losers. I know there's a lot of frustration up in the UP in particular about where some of the tax dollars go and where some of the incentives go. Well, you know, if you get out of the mode of picking winners and losers, it's not a contest to see who can get the ear of the power brokers. Everybody gets the same benefits across the board and all boats rise. And that's a way I roll. And I've been very outspoken on those positions. Another key thing that's important is that tax increase should never be the first option pursued. They should always be the last option. And it seems like in government, they're always looking for more taxes. Well, you know, sometimes you can't squeeze any more blood from a rock. You got to focus on the expense side of the ledger. And I've been an outspoken proponent of looking at expenses before you go off and entertain tax increases. We also need to follow the Constitution. I'm an outspoken advocate for life, for religious liberty, for our Second Amendment rights across the board. I think it's safe to say I'm probably the most well-versed candidate on the Constitution that's running. and probably serving right now. And I'm saying this as somebody who came late to the game. For the first 44 years of my life, I was not engaged in politics at all. I was not civically minded, but I've been engaged and making up for lost time and, frankly, paying my penance for that lapse of civics mindedness for the first 44 years in my service. So, and another important principle is that you cannot have sustained fiscal prosperity without a moral and religious society. So principles really do matter. You can see it in the headlines when you're following everything that's going on, all the craziness in D.C. as well as in Lansing, and we're drama free in that department. So going forward, what I'd like to see here for the state of Michigan is around principled solutions. So based on those principles we just talked about, that drastically changes how you go off and approach things like job growth and economic development. It changes how you approach taking care of our schools and promoting education excellence. It changes how you fix our roads. And we can talk a little bit about that as we go forward here, but that's a little bit of a background. I approach things from an engineering problem-solving perspective, which is not always in sync with the politically minded, ladder-climbing, selfish approach that you see up in Lansing. And so, but it is refreshing for a lot of the people I serve.
Now, you serve in the 7th District of Michigan. I had to kind of look up where that would be. It would be the northwestern portion of Wayne County. I come from Plymouth and Livonia area. I graduated from Plymouth Canton, so it's probably up right there in the backyard. So, but now, of course, we're up in the UP, and the problems that are faced by residents up here are quite different than the ones down that they would face in Wayne County or anywhere else in Lansing. And that gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. During your time so far traveling through the Upper Peninsula or past experience, if you've been up here before, what are you hearing from constituents up here, what they want to see you do?
Well, a lot of the stuff is around economic development and providing more opportunities for folks. And then when you start getting the jobs up here, then how do you get a good workforce to be off and that's tuned to that opportunity? So, we've got veterans coming up here. We've heard just last night, we were talking to some folks about setting up an opportunity to bring in job training opportunities for welders and some of the skilled trades that we've kind of left on the shelf for a long time. We haven't really provided a lot of incentive to go off and do that. So that's one of the areas that I think people are really looking for help on. It's mostly around economic development opportunities. And I look forward to what we're talking about with my economic development approach is that broad-based economic development that doesn't depend on, knowing the right people out in Lansing in order to help people out. It means that you get the government out of the way of the people who want to start up development. So for mining operations, for example, there's so many different hoops and hurdles that are blocking it from either a DEQ or EPA perspective up here. Sometimes when somebody is being responsible and wants to do the right thing, there's people that even if they check all the right boxes, they still block them from going off and making a living. And for me, that's frustrating. My background's old project management. The concept of critical path is such that's the shortest point between point A and point B on your schedule. And for too many projects and economic development projects, especially what I'm hearing a lot up here in the UP, the government's on that critical path and they're blocking you from getting from point A to point B. I've got a proposal for what I call time is money economic development, and it focuses on speed and getting the government off the critical path and going off and assuming that people that are trying to make a living for themselves don't want to destroy the community around them. They actually want to be part of that community as well. And let them go off and start working on their activities. And then you can always check up on them later and see if they're violating things. And then you can, bring down the hammer if you need to on it. But right now we're assuming everybody's guilty before they're proven innocent. And it should be the other way around.
Yeah, well, there's a history up here of especially when it comes to mining and other groups coming in, not having a lot of care for the environment or the damage that they leave behind. So you have to, you have to understand where people do come from. We live in a pristine area, and a lot of people want to keep it that way.
Right.
And you know, so you have like the Copperwood project going on in Gilgibbick County, and that's where a company out of Canada is looking at developing a mining project. It could mean 300 jobs,
yeah.
But also there is concern about what effects that might have on the Porcupine Mountain State Park in our area up here as well for trying to keep it that area pristine.
Absolutely. You got to be careful about the companies that come in. They take the resources and then leave, and so there's no doubt about that. But for the folks that have a track record of doing the right thing, you know, we can't treat them as the enemy, so to speak, here. For the ones that are bad actors, save that kind of treatment for the bad actors. They've got to go off and prove themselves after they've been proven to kind of do the slash and burn stuff. But for the rest of the folks, I mean, we're just looking for an opportunity to get the ball rolling. I'm a small business owner. I mean, so I've seen what happens when the government tries to make life miserable and they don't care for what your life is like. I mean, everything from paying quarterly tax payments on your to what we used to have was a Michigan business tax. It was a tax on gross receipts. I mean, you could have a net loss in a given year, but still pay more in taxes if you had because it was a tax on gross receipts. That's just totally clueless as far as the lives of a small business owner. And a lot of the economic development policies to date are focused on the big boys, and they don't give a hoot about the guys in the small business. 300 jobs, as you were talking about, that's a lot. But you know what also is a lot? Is when you have 300 small businesses, add one or two or three or four people. That's why I'm an advocate for the elimination of state personal income tax, and I've actually got a plan to do it without a replacement tax. And it takes a little bit of discipline, but I actually have outlined exactly how to go off and get that, and I think we can get there.
Well, a lot of people are going to want to see that plan.
Absolutely.
I know a couple of states that do it, and they do it fairly successfully, but it would be a hard sell here in Michigan.
Well, I mean, so is right to work, and giving our rank and file union members restore their freedom of assembly. Everybody said that was impossible to do, and I led that effort in the state of Michigan. So, there's some things that people say is impossible. I mean, people saying an aerospace engineer without any political experience getting elected directly to the state senate, they said was impossible. But I did that, and it was the first person to be elected in that manner in over three decades, and I beat four former state reps in the process. So. I like taking on impossible things. That's why I was working on space station. People aren't supposed to be living in space either.
Yeah. Well, it's not an easy task that you're faced with right now, having, you're going to be finishing up your second term in the Senate, and you're going up against also some names that, like Bill Schuette and Brian Kelly.
Oh, he's running? I didn't know that. I haven't seen him at any of our town halls. I was wondering about that.
Here in the Upper Peninsula just last weekend, so he did come through here.
Yeah,
and I mean, your polls are going to show that at best you're third right now in polling, and you've got an uphill climb if you ever hope to, be finding.
Here's
an
a nice thing about that, though. Here's something that's been kind of interesting. Name recognition is our issue, obviously. That's why we're up here. We're talking to folks and getting the word out. But when people know me, we get 75% or more of the vote, and we've had three straw polls down the area where people do know who I am, and they've seen my track record. They've realized that there is actually somebody who's saying or doing what he said he would do when he ran for office and sticking to principles, like the 14th Congressional District. These aren't like Pat Kolbeck's, family reunion type of straw polls. These are the 14th Congressional District, the U of M College Republicans, the Michigan Conservative Coalition, 75% or more of the vote. It's not an issue of name recognition with Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General. It's a case where people are seeing what's on the shelf with them and they're not buying. So even in the polls that have me down in that third ranking here, look at the undecideds. They're looking at what's on the shelf with these statewide candidates and they're saying, that is politics as usual. Reagan once asked for us to paint in bold colors, not pale pastels. There's a lot of pale pastel candidates out there. There's only one bold color candidate, and that's what I've been doing over the last 7 years.
Well, 15 months after the state voted for Trump in the presidential election,
yeah.
Many people say it's not going to be easy for a Republican to win governor, especially with some of the taint associated with the Snyder administration, the Flint water crisis. Definitely that comes right up to the forefront. How do you stand apart from the Bill Schuettes, the Brian Kellys, and the Rick Snyders, or Will you continue policies that they've implemented?
Well, I'm actually pretty clear that I'm one of the outsiders in this race, even though I've been in the state senate for 7 years. I was the chairman for the state police and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs budget in my first term, and we turned around those departments significantly. For the state police, we went from a post-driven workforce to getting the troopers out on the road, actually doing patrols. We've gone from 4 of the top 10 crime cities in the country down to 1, and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, what we've done by adopting performance-based budgets, which means that not only are we going to give you the money every year, but we're going to monitor your performance against specific metrics across the board. We went from one of the worst veteran service states to number 2 in the nation. And in the wake of that, what happened was I came back in my second term. I was reelected, and I'm the only state senator that was not appointed to a chairmanship position in the new legislature. And when I sat down with the Senate Majority Leader and asked him why was that the case, he said, well, you were too vocal in your opposition to Medicaid expansion, which, by the way, is Obamacare. It's Section 2001 of Obamacare. I proposed an alternative that would actually give people access to care at a lower burden to the taxpayer and actually give them higher quality care. That's how you save money. You kept them out of the hospital. And then I go, okay, that's interesting. I'm on the Republican side of that. Number 2, I was too vocal in my opposition to Common Core standards, which is a top-down centralization of education, and it took power away from the parents and the teachers and the students. I believe that we should be empowering the parents, teachers, and students and not micromanaging the classroom, and I took a penalty for that. So that's what he says, number 2. So I'm not really coupled with the typical politics as usual thinking up there with the Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General. They're associated very heavily with those policies. The Attorney General, you'll see him alternatively standing up and clapping like he did at the State of the State for those policies. But when he's on the radio talking to people, he says, no, I'm completely opposed to all those policies. So don't know where he is on that stuff sometimes. But we're pretty clear. We've actually been in the crucible public service and taken hits for principled stands. I'm not a bomb thrower. I just call it like it is on the policies. I don't get personal with individuals, which is, I think, the way we're supposed to serve. We're supposed to be principled statesmen representing the best interests of the people we serve, and I'm the only one in this race with a track record of staying true to the principles upon which you ran.
You mentioned a number of the issues where you've taken stances on with the healthcare marketplace for Michigan, for right to work. Another one was charter schools, because you're a proponent of charter schools and expanding that program.
Well, school choice in general. I think the parents should be in control of where they'd be able to send their kids to school. And that's very important. And it's good for all kids. I've noticed that the charter schools are public school academies. They're public schools. There's a lot of misinformation being presented around them. But really the big difference between a charter school and a traditional public school is one's got unionized education services, the other one does not. And that's the fundamental difference between the two. I know they say, oh, it's not a level playing field and stuff. I actually did an analysis of all the different statutes that apply to all the different functions of the different schools. If you go to morninginmichigan.com, I've got a little thing called the data center. You can click on a matrix where we do a comparison of all the different school options that are out there. And really, the fundamental difference is exactly that. One's unionized, one's not. And for some people, it works. But for some people, it doesn't. And ultimately, I want the parents to be the ones controlling how decisions are made around the future of their students. And I've actually got some legislation that I'm promoting called the Enhanced Michigan Education Savings Program that actually offers the opportunity to provide over $3,000 per pupil per year additional funding into the schools without increasing taxes. And it's modeled on programs that are being used in parochial schools or private schools out in Detroit, of all places, out in Detroit Cornerstone and Cristo Rey schools, that encourage things like work-study programs where companies will actually pay up to $7,000 per year for kids that participate in a work-study program, but they require a student-specific account to bookkeep against. They're not going to just give it to the school district. They want to give it to the specific students. A lot of the unions are actually opposing this legislation, which, I mean, they all say we need more money for schools. Well, they oppose this legislation. And you know why they opposed it? Because they wanted to be in control of how that money was being dispensed. So fundamentally, when it comes down to the education issue, it's a and with the education choice and where kids should be able to school, it's about control of that of your students' future. And I'm unabashedly in favor of parents being in the driver's seat of where those decisions are made.
I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, since there's so many people here that maybe not be familiar with you, there are others who are, and you've received a number of endorsements. That I was quite actually taken back by when I looked at the list. I said, well, a lot of these, you're known by a lot of more people than you know than I would. So,
yeah, it has been kind of interesting along the way here. I mean, sometimes you just get focused on, you know, just getting the job done. That I'm not a very good marketer, if you know what I mean. But we've gotten some very high-level endorsements, people that have noticed what we've been doing. So somebody in your field, actually, Sean Hannity, endorsed us. That was while I was talking about healthcare at national level. I've actually been recognized nationally for my free market healthcare solutions. If you go to Forbes.com and type in Colbeck, you can go off and see a couple of articles that I've written on that subject that have not only implication here in Michigan, but nationwide. And so Sean Hannity's endorsement was based on my work on healthcare in particular. Got the endorsement of Bob Lutz, who I don't know if you're familiar with him at all, but he's an automotive legend. He's worked at Chrysler, GM, Ford, BMW, across the board. He is the one responsible for kicking off the Volt and electric cars. And all-around great guy. And he signed on with our team and recently signed on as finance chair for my my campaign as well. And then we've got Ted Cruz. I was a state chair for Ted Cruz during the last election. We've got faith-based leaders from across the state that are supporting us. So Bob Duco, another radio personality down in Southeast Michigan, but also we've got folks like Dave Ajima, a former national committeeman from Michigan. We've got Mark Gurley, my friend here, who's helping me out, taking me around the state. He's a grassroots vice chair for the Republican Party here. Catherine Engelbrecht, who was with True the Vote. I don't know if you're familiar with her at all. She was targeted by Lois Lerner because she had the audacity of asking for a 501c3 status for the organization True the Vote that was working to eliminate voter fraud. Well, Catherine Engelbrecht saw what I was doing here in the state of Michigan in regards to voting fraud. I was the one who asked for investigation into fraud in the wake of the last election. And it resulted in the identification of 31 counts of voter fraud that were actually occurred here in the state of Michigan. 15 of those cases were in the city of Detroit. And that was just based on a data mining of voter data. And there's zero prosecutions to date on that. That's handed over to the Attorney General's office. So Catherine Engelbrecht is one of those endorsements, and it's because she's seeing what I'm doing from that perspective. So there's a lot of folks who are paying attention that are drilling in on what I've been working on here, and they appreciate the work that we've been doing. So, yeah, we've got a list. You can see the list for yourself if you go out to ColbeckForGovernor.com. And just click on some of the endorsements. And frankly, even bigger than the names is some of the things that they're saying, which is very humbling, and it's an honor on why some of these people are endorsing us. I encourage people to go off and read that as well, not just the names, because it's pretty humbling.
Senator, if you're elected to the position and you're taking over for Governor Rick Snyder, one of his hooks that he hangs his hat on is talking about his budget, and then we got balanced budgets on time, you know, and that's all sound great, but as you're talking with people up here, one of the things cut to make that budget has been revenue sharing. We live in small towns, we're hurting, you know. That's where we feel it. It's nice to have some grant money available, but you know, it's the smaller towns that took the hit.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not just smaller towns up in the UP. It's smaller towns down there. I got tumbleweeds going through some of the municipal offices out in the Downriver area where I used to represent as well. And I've been very clear about, and this is something unique from all the other candidates that are out there, I want to shrink the size of state government, but I want to shift that spending out to the local units of government. They're the ones who know which roads need fixing. They're the ones who know where we need the public safety officials. They're the ones who know what water mains need fixing. And we try to micromanage too much from a central perspective. There's too much power being concentrated in Lansing. Frankly, there's too much power being concentrated up in D.C. as well. There's a reason why DC's got the highest per capita income around the whole country. That's not the way we're designed to operate. We're supposed to be spreading the wealth, but not from a redistribution of wealth perspective, but from a spreading of opportunity for everybody. And that means freedom. And we've lost appreciation for that. That's why local units of government are most important. That's where we should be pushing a lot of our resources. Now, we need responsible units of government as well. So there's got to be accountability for that, because we've gotten some of the units of government that have taken advantage of the fact that a lot of people don't pay as close attention to what happens financially in some of these local units of government. But having said that, that's where the control needs to be.
Senator Patrick Kolbeck, gubernatorial candidate for Michigan, thank you so much. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.